Wait for it, wait for it, and we're live. Hey, all you crazy sci-fi and fantasy fans. It's time for your daily dose of shenanigans over here at the Blasters and Blades podcast. Wow, I almost stopped reading for a second. Funny how that works. Just a couple of nerdy veterans and one chaos coordinator geeking out over our science fiction passions and fantastical fantasies. A place where magic is king, the sky is the limit, and space is the place. We are the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. So without further ado, we're going to let our guests introduce themselves. We're going to be very careful not to overstep each other, but it's a full panel because everyone loves dragons. Who doesn't? And if you don't like dragons, I don't think we could be friends anymore. That's just how this works. All right. So we're going to start in alphabetical order as per the great Oracle, otherwise known as Word, because it goes by first names, not last. And we're going to ask Miss Chloe Gardner to introduce herself.
Hello. I am Chloe Gardner, author of massive fantasy universes, science fiction fun, and a bunch of urban fantasy running around fighting off the monsters.
As one does.
As one does.
All right. Next, a man who certainly needs no introduction, but I'm going to let him do it anyway because I've got manners, Mr. James M. Ward.
Hey there, everybody. Always happy to be with JR and his friends. I'm a game designer and a novelist, and currently JR and I are working really hard on two books.
Technically, it's two series, so lots more than two, but you know, we're ambitious like that. All right. Next, we have the lovely Ms. Jana S. Brown, who sometimes cosplays as other people.
Oh, it's true. I'm Jana S. Brown, also known as Jana Ray, also known as other things. I write science fiction and fantasy under the pen name Jana Ray. I have three series going right now, and I love me some dragons. My daughter says we should have a pet dragon, and I'm considering it.
I mean, training it would be fun. Feeding it, maybe not so much.
There's the problem. Not enough cows.
I seem to remember having a similar conversation with Katie about her giant wolves in another series she writes.
Yeah, feeding wild animals isn't a problem in Montana.
This is true. So I guess we just have to find a lot of neighbors we don't like and they'll stop crossing the fence line. Somebody said something and stopped.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, everybody wants a dragon until you realize that you lost the dragon and the egg. And I am dealing with that right this moment.
Oh, no.
All right, Katie, if you could introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers at home.
Yeah, so I'm Katie Cross. I write young adult fantasy in the world of Alcara. I really, really love dragons. I have the Dragon Master trilogy that I'm excited to talk about tonight because just like Jana/Jenna, I love me some dragons and let's have pets, right?
Absolutely. Although I do wonder with people with that many pen names, if they start getting a little confused who they're talking to when they talk to themselves sometimes.
I give myself the best advice.
Well, there's that then. All right. And last but certainly not least, we have Miss Melissa McShane, a new guest of the show and friend of Jana's.
Yes. Jana and I have known each other for many, many, many years. I am the writer of more than 50 fantasy novels, including a series about dragons. And I am really happy to be here because Jana talks about how great this podcast is all the time.
Oh, and we didn't even pay her to say that. We're too poor.
That's right. Yeah.
Ta-da.
We're gonna go places, though. I just know it. All right. So the next part of the introduction, dear listener at home, is how we first met everyone on the panel. So we were at the annual meeting of the St. George Society, and we ended up clearing out all of the pesky dragons from England. So you're welcome. We expect payment in gold or silver, maybe some plutonium. I don't know. We're not picky. Just, you know, not currency. Because we've got standards. All right. Now, we have a new guest on the show. So, Melissa, are you ready for the religion questions? There are wrong answers.
I am ready. Yes.
All right. Star Wars, Star Trek, or Firefly?
Firefly, no question.
Excellent answer. We just did a panel on that one. All right. Oh, cool. Game of Thrones, The Wheel of Time, or Chronicles of Narnia?
Oh, you know, I have an early love for Wheel of Time, but I got to say Chronicles of Narnia, one of my first fantasy reads.
Excellent. I'm getting refamiliarized with it. Have you seen the show The Magicians?
I haven't. I read the book that it's based on. But
in the books, basically have a knockoff version of Narnia that they're using as the setting, which I thought was kind of cool. I'm like, I get these references.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then because we are not knuckle-dragging troglodytes, coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Neither. I drink hot chocolate, as dark a chocolate as you can manage it, with no cream or sugar. Just
you put marshmallows in it?
As bitter as they come. Nope, no marshmallows, just as bitter as they come.
So what's the highest cacao level that you'll take on percentages? Because, you know, some of the pricier chocolate bars will say the percentage.
That's right. 80% is the top for me because it starts to taste not like chocolate when it gets higher than 80%. So it's like it's still good, but it's not chocolate anymore to me. So 80% is probably my limit.
I'm seeing all the ladies in the panel nodding along. So apparently we have a quorum. A consensus has been reached.
That's right.
All right. And then we have, first, I figured since we're having a panel about dragons, we should define what a dragon is. So I went to the Oracle, otherwise known as Wikipedia, because it's easy, it's quick, and everybody can access it. Not everyone should edit it, though. I found some typos. But a dragon is a magical, legendary creature that appears in the folklore of multiple cultures worldwide. Beliefs about dragon vary considerably throughout the regions, but dragons in Western cultures since the High Middle Ages have often been depicted as winged, horned, and capable of breathing fire. Dragons in Eastern cultures are usually depicted as wingless, four-legged, serpentine creatures with above-average intelligence. Commonalities between dragons' traits are often a hybridization of feline, reptilian, mammalian, and avian features, which is basically everything and anything. That's my insert, people. Scholars believe a large extinct or migrating crocodile bear the closest resemblance, especially when encountered in forested or swampy areas, and most likely the template for Asian dragon imagery as well. That's kind of less exciting if it's just a crocodile.
Yeah.
So did you kind of agree with the base of the definition that they pool together?
I think it's missing equine. My favorite dragon images are the equine dragons.
Okay.
And what about the science fiction dragons? Come on.
I have seen people write dragons in outer space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Still haven't sold me on the physics, but it's a good read. Mm-hmm. But who needs physics when you have dragons?
Yeah. Right.
I think Chris Fox is one of the ones who did dragons in space in his sci-fi setting.
Oh, I think so.
I think other people probably have too. He's probably not the only one, but... All right, so everyone agrees. All right, so what is your experience? If you know, all of you guys have written dragons at some level, so I'm going to give everyone a chance to sort of shoot their bona fides at the audience, so they know how awesome you are, and then also kind of tells them what of yours they should read, which is also a big help. And if you listen and it intrigues you, people, you should go buy it twice and give it to your friends. Yeah. All right, Chloe, what have you written that has dragons in it?
I put surprise dragons just about everywhere, though my interpretation tends to be very broad. I have people who are dragons because they have special powers, and that's just how they're categorized. And I have a set of fey dragons running around in my paranormal detective series who eat fey and are just really primordial, scary, poisonous creatures with very little intelligence at all, just all tactics and invincibility. And I put shifter dragons into a series as sort of an out of nowhere thing that I'd rather not spoiler myself, but there I sprinkle them in everywhere just as something I can't resist doing.
Okay, so this is one of those moments where I will yet again tell Bezos or whoever's running Amazon, they really do need a buy all button, because then they could just go to your profile and get all of it. It would make things easier. All right, James, what all have you written that has dragons in it?
Well, pretty much tons of stuff, actually. But I have this marvelous visual sample here called Wolfoid. Oh,
solo screen so we can look at it.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Good. Wolfoid is a book of short stories that I've written for over the last 40 years. And I have tonnage of dragon stories in there. And then I've done several game systems that use dragons as important characters. And right now, JR is making me write with him a short story on a dragon turning into a human so he can eat knights better.
I mean, the prompt was just writing from the monster's POV. You were the one who decided we should make the monster a dragon, because we also have a dragon anthology coming up.
Yeah, that's true.
About dragons. All right, so next we have the ever lovely Miss Jenna. What all have you written with dragons in it? Or are you just a huge fan?
Oh, all of the above. I am a huge fan, but I also have stories. So Wings of Change, It's an anthology that came out with Camden Park Press, so I have a YA dragon story in there. I am finishing my War of the Lich trilogy, and spoiler alert, there might be an undead dragon in the finale. So that's coming out, and then I have some Dragon Shifter stuff that will be in another series that will probably come out next year.
Undead dragons.
Undead.
So what's the opposite of fire that it would breathe for the undead? I guess ice?
Acid.
There's no, acid? It
means acid.
You're not dead until you're cold and dead, so the ice kind of made sense to me.
Bubbling.
Mm-hmm. Acid works. But then how does it not dissolve? You know what? We'll just go with it.
Magic. magic solves all things. It's the magic of a hand waving.
Katie, what all have you written with dragons?
I've written a lot with dragons, but the best place to start is my Dragon Master trilogy. So it has Flame, Flight, and Freedom. It's about two sisters. One finds a wild dragon. One finds a new magic. And they obviously have to save the world of Alcara together. It's the best. It's very much dragon and dragon rider focused. So like, if you like Dragon Riders of Pern, that kind of thing, it has so much of that vibe where a lot of the story revolves around the relationship with the witch and the dragon. So it's just like one of those stories you can tuck into and stay with for a long time.
And Katie is one of the few early adopters of authors that are selling everything direct on her own website. So yeah. If you want to support, want to read the books and also support more directly, her website would be the perfect place to go. And that will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
You're just cutting out the middleman. I don't know what they're going to do with you. They might get really angry, Katie.
Yeah, they don't like me. It's really fun.
Contrarian. I like it. And Miss Melissa, what all have you written with dragons that people might want to check out?
Well, I have the four-volume Dragons of Motherstone. That started as a short story in the same anthology Jana was talking about, Wings of Change, where the prompt was about young adult dragons. They wanted the dragons to be young instead of these ancient horrors. They wanted to see, you know, what do they do when they start out when they're little. And so I had the idea for explaining why it was that dragons kidnapped princesses. And that's not how the story ended up being, because they asked me to alter it for reasons. And but I was intrigued by that first idea. And so I came back to it and wrote four books about Lamprefire the dragon. She is the main character. So it's centered on dragons. They don't change shape except for one notable exception. They are just creatures. And the story is about the relationship of dragons with humans in a world when humans thought all dragons were extinct, and dragons think that humans are completely pointless. They have nothing in common. They don't know what they would need to do. And Lamprefire is the first dragon to say, I don't know, maybe we have something in common with these people. So that's the trilogy. It starts with Spark the Fire, and that's available. And they do have a buy all button on the Kindle app, not the app, on the web store. So
on the series page, you can go buy all.
Series page, you can buy all. So
and we will
go
link
to the series page. What?
There you go. We will link to the series. I do that.
Yes,
for that
good.
Reason.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So was the reason they kidnapped princesses because they're keen fashion sense?
It was not. Fortunately, they have to prove they're adults by keeping a human safe and cared for a 12-night period. And okay, that proves they're an adult and can be, you know, full fellowship with the flight.
Okay. I still think the fashion sense would have been funnier, but I didn't write the story, so.
Well, in the story, the reason the dragon thought that the person she kidnapped was a princess was because of his keen fashion sense. So it was really a prince, but she can't tell the difference because they're humans. She can't tell if it's male or female.
Oops.
Yeah.
All right. I wonder how that would have worked if they tried playing fetch. Anyway. All right. So we're going to start and just kind of open the discussion, and everyone can kind of chime in. We'll try not to talk over each other. But first, let's start with what everyone loves about dragons. And you can just sort of chime in as you got answers.
I love this question. So I'll start it out. And it kind of goes back to what I said, but I think what I read dragons for is the relationship that develops usually between dragons and a writer or a human or whoever they are and like whoever else is around them. I think the exploration of like these big giant beasts that really are like a symbol of power relating to like a human or a witch or whatever you are, I think it's kind of a tale as old as time for dragon lovers. And watching different people explore that different ways. Like so many of the books that Summer is here sound so fun because there's so many different takes. It's like rediscovering dragons every time, which is really fun.
It's almost like I'm gonna
agree with that. That it's all about, I mean, we could write about dragons or read about dragons, but unless we have the interaction with something that we can relate to, like a human, the dragon doesn't have as much depth because we don't have anything to compare it to. We don't say, well, this is what humans are like and this is what dragons are like and here's how they're different and here's how they're the same. So I like, and I think dragons are just this dream, you know? I mean, think of all the dragons that people write about that are intelligent and wise, and I mean, we write about all kinds of dragons, but I think that's like this creature that we can meet on our own terms that's maybe intelligent enough to share things with us that we can learn from. I think there are a few magical creatures that have that same bond with humans.
I think that dragons pair in an almost unique way with unicorns, where unicorns are a symbol of purity and innocence, and dragons are a symbol of wisdom and experience and old knowledge. And you put those two things together and you can get a really profound dichotomy story out of it with no work at all. I've done that in a short story that never really turned into a good story, but the dragons and the unicorns just played off of each other really, really well. And I love stories that explore that old knowledge, whether or not the dragon is the good guy. They can be a fire-breathing, hoarding monster, and they are still old and wise and experienced. And it's a cool character trope that I like finding in places.
Well, and I love that depth. When a dragon comes on the screen, you very often at the beginning don't know, is this a good guy, a bad guy, a selfish guy? They have the same amount of depth that people do. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I remember as a kid watching the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. This is how old I am, I know. And you know, they wander out, and the first thing you get is these first-level adventurers that get shoved in front of Tiamat, the multi-headed dragon. And it's like, ah! And she's mean, and all of these things, and they run away because, of course, you would run away. But you get that, and then you get all the way to things like Dragonheart, which Sean Connery was the voice of the dragon. And I'm sorry, as soon as it was Sean Connery speaking through a dragon, I'm there. Just sign me up. That's my dragon. I'm good. And so there's all this range between, and you know, and then you get the Smaug and you get the Hoarders, and then you get, so they have this range. And so the stories you can tell are really limitless, even though they're all brought together by this thing that we call a dragon.
I mean, I'd listen to Sean read his dang grocery list, so no shame. He's got an excellent accent.
Anytime. So
there are a select group of voice talent that I would do that for. So, wonder if we could get him to narrate our books. Think we can afford him? Anyway, I think my first experience with dragons was less scary. It was Pete's Dragon, the green animated one that was in the real world cartoon kind of merge. I don't know what you call that type of movie, but
there is no other one. That other thing was an abomination. So stick with classic. Things.
But the original cartoon, it was, you know, just because other people think it's scary doesn't mean it can't be tamed or be your friend. And I don't know. I think I like that version of it for the same reason I like wolves, because on the one hand, they can both be scary, but scary doesn't mean they're bad. Scary doesn't mean they can't be your friend. And for whatever reason, the little boy in me, it spoke to me when I was a kid. So,
hey, Nick, what's your favorite dragon? Is Nick there?
The ones from Reign of Fire.
Oh.
So not the cuddly kind.
Scary dragons.
No, it like Janice said, it should look like a dinosaur with wings, and those things were terrifying.
Good movie too. So that doesn't hurt. Right. Is Stabby there to answer what she loves about dragons?
I'm here.
So what is it about dragons?
I think it depends. It depends on the dragon, because there's dragons that like you gotta love them because they're scary. And then there's dragons that are just so sweet and cuddly, and you just gotta love them because they're sweet and cuddly, like Toothless in How to Train Your Dragon. You just want to give him a hug. He's so adorable. But then there's like the dragons in Evolution, and they are a bit more scary, and I think that's also fun. So it just depends on the dragon, I think.
Okay. So yours is more situational based on how it's presented? Okay. Yes. That's fair. All right. So what is it that you think when you read dragons in fiction that you think people do wrong? We don't need to name names unless they're not alive, because, you know, we don't, classics are free game, but I don't want to, you know, harsh anyone's, you know, whatever. But what do you see that people get wrong a lot when they write dragons, in your opinion, obviously? I think that when they make them not fit the setting. I'll go first while you guys are all thinking. So sometimes when the setting is grimdark and suddenly they're trying to write something cuddly, it just feels out of place. And unless you're trying to write that fish out of water story, it just doesn't work for me. And, you know, so for that one's for me.
I think part of the fun of dragons is that versatility, right? Like, it's hard to say that one person did dragons wrong because there's so many different takes, but I'm glad you pointed that out, JR, because as you said that, I'm like, yeah, if they don't fit the context of the story and it kind of makes either a fool of the dragon or it like misses my wish. Like, if you make a promise about the dragon at the beginning of the book or by the cover and that dragon isn't delivered in the content of the book, then I'm just mad because I wanted a specific type of dragon. And if you gave me a fluffy dragon and I was waiting for Rain of Fire, then I'm not going to be too excited. Yeah.
I have read one book where they had a dragon on the cover in a fantasy novel and there were no dragons in the story. I was so mad.
Oh, my. Oh,
that's a problem.
No. Luckily, I didn't pay for it because it was a library, but still. I was mad at the library that got cheated.
Of course, people have a problem with it when the horse is used as a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an easy failure mode of using a dragon as a magic motorcycle without having the biological side of this animal, and it can have lots of magic going on. It doesn't have to eat, it doesn't have to whatever, but the biological side of this being an animal and it having an emotional engagement and a historical story to it and its own agenda and its own agency, it's real easy to turn it into a magic motorcycle.
So you don't like it as a beast of burden, you want it to have...
If you're going to do a dragon, use the dragon, man!
Okay.
I don't know. I've seen the biggest problem. The dragon takes away from the story and the protagonist. Mm-hmm. It appears on the scene, and it's devastating and large, and suddenly you're not noticing the hero and the heroine. I don't like those kind of stories at all.
Okay. I can see that. Failure to deliver it properly.
Yes.
What about you, Melissa? Is there anything you see with dragons that you don't like?
Well, I'm kind of with Katie in that it's really flexible, and so it is hard to pick, you know, like, oh, I don't like it when dragons have only four fingers on one hand instead of five. You know, that's because that's nitpicky, and it's going to be different for everybody. You know, I don't think on that level, details don't really matter. But yeah, I think I was thinking of one book where the dragon was very disappointing in this particular book. It's an older book, but I will not name names just in case. But it was the same situation you were talking about, JR, where it doesn't really fit the setting. It was the wrong kind of dragon for the story they were going to tell. And the author wrote two books. And the second book just made it worse. Like, you know, the second book could have redeemed the reason we use this kind of dragon is because in the second book, well, now it makes sense, but it just made it worse. So, if the dragon doesn't fit the situation, if you're using the wrong kind of dragon, then that's kind of disconcerting because they're so flexible. You have an endless opportunity to use all sorts of dragon types and personalities that I don't think there's any reason to ever choose wrong, really, in terms of not having available the kind of dragon you want.
Okay. Nick and Stabia, you haven't weighed in. Is there anything you don't like seeing when people use dragons?
I don't know. I'm not really got the knowledge base like everybody else in this room. So I think they should all be hoarders because I'm used to like Vulcan. So if they're not hoarding their gold or something of treasure, then it doesn't really.
So you want all of them to be Smaug from like Lord of the Rings?
Hell yeah. Okay. I want to sit on a mountain of gold.
There we go.
Yes. But you just want to try to go all Donald, or is it the ducks and swim in it, right? Scrooge McDuck? I know you.
Yeah, but the duck would break his neck. I think the dragon could actually get into the gold and not hurt itself.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, probably. So are there any, so we've talked about what we don't like, what we generically like. Are there any skills that sometimes you see with dragons in fiction that you like more than others? Sometimes they have magic with breathe the fire, they can fly, and some they can sort of slip in and out of dimensions. Are there any of the kind of tropes that go with dragons that you like the most?
Oh, I like the invulnerable hide, because I think if you consider it, that opens up a lot of possibilities. Like, can other dragons penetrate the impenetrable hide? And what happens if a dragon breaks a bone? And you can't get at to set it because you can't get any further than that. Or does the bone become invulnerable? It's a minor thing that I think could be explored more. And I might say that because I did try to explore it more in my series. So anyway, that's just something little that I think is interesting when it shows up.
So the natural if then this, then that approach to storytelling. So if you do this, what's the next logical sort of step?
Yeah, I think that's interesting because then the story's sort of telling itself. You're answering questions.
Okay. James, do you have a favorite trope when it comes to dragons? I see you nodding along.
I have one that really irritates me, the one that all the gamers expect all dragons to have a patch on their chest that they can shoot the arrow into and kill. Thank you, Tolkien, very much. They expect every dragon to have that. I just don't get it. It used to drive Gary nuts. You know, all elves have to have bows. All dwarves have to use axes. It just, the kind of stuff, I mean, Tolkien is wonderful, and he did bring fantasy to the world. But man, oh man, everybody thinks that's the only way to go. It kind of drives a game designer and a writer crazy.
I mean, but Gary also did the all dwarves have beards. So, I mean, there's a little give and take.
All female dwarves do have beards.
Luscious
beard. Ratchet said so.
Yep. Multiple times.
So what about you, Chloe? I see you nodding along. Do you have any favorite tropes that you see in fiction that you really like?
I'm looking at my two favorite dragon instances, which are the natural history of dragons and Terry Pratchett, and trying to figure out what these two things have in common and what they tell me about myself. And I think that what that is it's that dragons in a single universe coming in lots of different species and temperaments and natures is an awful lot of fun. It becomes an active discovery just to go off and figure out what all of the dragons are like.
Okay, the discovery reading is part of the fun when you read fantasy and speculative.
We have the little ones that sort of scamper around, and they have this nature, and then you have the really, really big ones, and then there are the really aggressive ones in the middle, and how do you keep them alive, and how do you, what happens when they interbreed, and treating it as a natural history, sort of a science project, is really a lot of fun. It turns them into a very three-dimensional species by treating them like that.
I love that they can fly. Flying is awesome. And when you read books and you see movies and that kind of stuff, that's at least with friendly dragons, that's almost the first thing that anybody really wants to do, is they want to climb on top of it and they want to fly, because it's not something we can do. We can watch birds fly, we can watch insects fly, we can watch all these things, but unless you put us in a metal tube and shove us up into the sky and hope we don't fall down, we don't have the ability naturally to fly. But we admire these things that fly. And so, you know, I'm thinking somebody mentioned Falcor in the chat, and both when Atreyu rides Falcor for the first time and when Bastion rides him, you just see them nerding out on the fact that they're flying. You know, and I think this would be me. So I would be on the back going, yeah, because it would be really, really exciting. It's not a thing we can do. And, you know, the Dragon Riders of Pern, all of these places, there's a reason why so often it is we are going to ride the dragon, because it's horse, but now it's to the level of horse, but we're going to fly. And flying is awesome.
It's all fun and games till you swallow a bug at the speed of flight.
Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. No bugs.
I think kind of going with that is the communication that happens between dragon and dragon rider. I think dragon rider is one of the biggest like tropes kind of like people expect or want to read. Like, just like you said, Jenna, like up in flight, we can't do it. You're on this massive beast that can like be anything that might harm you. But I think that being able to communicate, the ability to communicate with the dragons is something that I look for a lot in fiction. Not that it can't be done well without that, but I'm always eager to see how and what those dragons say and how they interact. Like, I thought what made Smaug so interesting was the way he spoke to Bilbo, right? Like, I thought, like, Smaug's dialogue is what really, like, caught me to him.
Okay. He definitely, for all, at some level, he was kind of evil, almost. You kind of understood where he was coming from as well. Like, he had a very clearly defined motive. He wasn't wantonly killing, but he wasn't not killing either. Like, it was kind of a good example of a sympathetic hero. I mean, sympathetic villain, even if he was still the bad guy, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Really? He killed the whole city of dwarves.
Mm-hmm. But true. I mean, he was attracted to the magical thing that was the king had. So, I mean, it was the gold.
The Arkham Stone.
I didn't say he was a good guy, but he was definitely, you understood where he was coming from. Right. And they certainly were trying to kill him too. It went both ways.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can clearly see you don't agree.
Doesn't matter, JR. Let's continue on.
So does anybody else think that Smaug was not at all sympathetic? Am I out here by myself? I'm cool with that, by the way.
I'm less concerned with whether or not he's sympathetic and more concerned with whether he's intriguing and slick. Because I can like a lot of really bad guys if they are smart. And he had a lot of that going on that just was really interesting to hear him think out loud. Talk some more, please. I like you.
So, Nick, this is where you have to say it. This episode set it up perfectly for you. I'm ready and go. Just because you're a bad guy,
further the plot. Doesn't mean. I got like four catchphrases. You got to give me a little heads up on the side.
He likes to quote.
Just because he's a bad guy doesn't mean he's a bad guy.
See? All right, wreck it round. That's like the philosophical tome of the ages, people. All right, we're going to pause for a moment where we're going to shamelessly shill for the man, and then we're going to jump back into talking about dragons, because why not?
A newly minted PhD, Noah Parker is thrilled to land a dream job at the hottest tech company in the American Southwest, genetically engineering new lines for their feature product, Living Breathing Dragons. Desperate to create the perfect family pet, Reptilian Corp hopes to put a dragon in every home. But with his newfound access to the company's resources, Noah has a secret goal. Modify the dragon's genetic code, bending them to another purpose entirely. Domesticating Dragons by Dan Cobalt and BaneBooks.com.
So would anyone else want a dragon as a pet? I'm sure that couldn't go wrong at all.
A pet? I don't know. A companion, maybe. But
well, it depends. Fire lizards.
Well, okay, true. But fire lizards aren't dragons. I mean, how are you defining dragon?
Exactly.
It's a big thing with cats on his chest.
Okay. So Do you guys tend to have strong opinions one way or another when they have dragons that have shifting abilities so they can, you know, morph in and out of human form? You see that out in
Depends on how they do it.
Like Depends Power Rangers?
No, like Serafina. Have you guys read Serafina? Like,
it's on my shelf.
Oh, so good. Her uncle is actually, like, she's half dragon, half human, I guess. And her uncle is full dragon, but they can transform into humans, but they keep their reptilian brain. So it's a phenomenal book, and the follow-up's really good too, but it's a really cool study of, like, dragons taken out of context and put into a human, but they keep their brain, and so they're trying to, like, understand emotion and that kind of stuff. That in that context, I really liked dragons changing into something else because it was just so different. I never thought about it, but they kept some of the dragon part of themselves. So that was really fascinating. But I don't generally, like, go for that all that much.
Yeah, that's not really what interests me about dragons. So it's not like I think it's horrible or I would have mentioned it as something people get wrong. Because I don't think it is something people get wrong. I think it's perfectly valid. It's just not as interesting to me as a dragon that stays a dragon.
Okay.
Yeah. Dragon shifters are really, really hot in paranormal romance. I've read a bunch of them. They are hot in all ways, yes, Chloe. But you know, because there's a power dynamic there. You get a lot of things, and they are, I think it's wolves and then dragons are probably number two in that genre. And it is. It's power dynamics. It's the horde. It's the dynamics of whether or not they can live with other dragons. There's a lot of stuff that comes together for that kind of thing. So I do love a really good dragon shifter story.
Have you written any in your many personalities that write books?
Have I written? Yes. Have I published? Not yet.
Okay. Do you ever get confused when you're writing and forget which personality you're supposed to be writing as and, like, mix it up?
No. I am very, very clear about all of the multiple people that are in my head.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Are any of them dragons?
Well, duh. If there's all going right, to be well, lots of us in here, we may as well diversify.
May as well. Chloe, do you have thoughts on dragons as shifters?
Dragon shifters are kind of like vampires. There's an awful lot of character you get for free. They're, yeah. You can run with them, and there's so much assumed background to them that you don't even have to build, and you start from something, which is, it's a cheat code. It's an awful lot of fun because it's a cheat code, and people understand that a dragon shifter has certain capacities, certain behaviors, certain contexts that you just go for it. And it's all, yeah. Shatem.
Well, and it's fun when they play with, is the dragon part of their personality kind of its own thing? And then the human mind is another thing, or are they merged together? You get this a lot with shifters of all sorts. We'll talk about werewolves on another episode, mm-hmm. and it's the same kind of thing. Anytime you're dealing with something that has dual sides like that, are they one being? Are they two beings sharing the same body? You know, how does all that work? And that can be really fun to delve into because you get those stories where they're like, yeah, my dragon wants one thing and the human person wants something else. And you have this internal struggle going on, and it can make for interesting conflict. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about you, Stabby? I know you you like to read the stuffs. Do you ever read the Dragon Shifters?
I don't do so much Dragon Shifters. I really enjoyed the books with Serafina and Aragorn. That was one of my favorite series, and of course I'm in that moment where the author was Christopher Paolini. And I enjoyed those books. We all know I'm dyslexic. I had to look at it in order to say it correctly.
It happens.
I loved that story in general, and I loved it when they made it into a movie and really let you see Serafina as a dragon and Aragorn as his as her writer. Like, I truly enjoyed that whole series. It was just so much fun.
I'm going to have to break down and read it one of these days. It's been on my TBR list forever and a day.
I had to leave you guys for a second because I had to go get my pet dragon.
Uh-oh, we'll put it on the full screen so you can show people. Hold on, solo layout.
You had to go get him. So he's my pet, my little pet dragon, and he comes in his little egg. I told you, having a pet dragon is all fun and games till you can't find their egg. That's my little friend.
Oh. Okay, so do you have you ever seen where they weren't egg-born creatures? I mean, I've seen some that described more mammalian birthing process when you see the birth of new dragons. Do you guys have a preference or even care if they show that part of it?
Again, it has to work with the story. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because we go back into talking about dragon shifters. Now you have different lore where it's the when do they come into that part of themselves. So very often you see them born as human beings that have no idea. And then there's some kind of a point of transformation. And so that works because that's part of how those kinds of stories are set up. Mm-hmm. If you're setting them up to say, yes, well, they obviously have eggs. I wrote a story in a book called Witches of a Certain Age. And the whole point of the story there was a witch that found out that there were abandoned dragon eggs up on a ridge above her ranch. And the mother had come back looking for them. And so the whole story is about getting the mom to the eggs and getting them out of there before the U.S. Army shows up and takes care of the dragon their way. And their way is a very violent, messy way. So there, the eggs mattered because it was the crux of, well, she needs her eggs and needs to fly them to someplace safe. But otherwise, it kind of depends. Another place where they used the eggs, interesting, was Melanie Ron wrote a series about the Dragon Prince is the first one. Now I can't remember the series name. But the interesting thing there was that gold came from the shells of dragon eggs. So the economy of all of the kingdoms that were attached together was based on these eggs that came from the dragons, and they only lived in the desert. So the king over the desert had a very, very strong position of power when he was dealing in politics because he controlled the dragon eggs. And so he controlled the gold. And there was a lot of fighting that happened over that and a lot of different things that went on because now you've got an economy built around dragon eggs. So it's all about where does that fit into the story and what depth can it give you? Otherwise, it doesn't much matter. They're there and that's okay.
I've seen where they use dragon parts for armor, like dragon scale or dragon hide. I don't think I've ever seen where the eggs had gold before. Because in a lot of like RPGs, be it tabletop or video game, that's kind of a kill a dragon, make armor. Is one of the things you can do.
So. Yeah, the eggs is gold was brilliant because it had such ramifications into all of the politics and everything else because there were the only place the dragons could live was in the desert. So whoever had ruled the desert, they had such control over the economics.
Okay. Did anybody ever play games that had dragons? James, you're exempt from this one because we know you made the games. Did anyone else ever play the games that had dragons in them?
Who didn't play games that James wrote that had dragons in them?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I did.
He's Skyrim. Responsible for this.
So Skyrim had dragons in it, which was fun. Dragon Age had dragons sort of in the background, which was kind of cool. You could do just looking at PC or console games. But I don't know if that was something the ladies partook in.
My daughter does.
Clearly a lady of taste.
I was never a big gamer, so I didn't.
Spyro.
Oh. Spyro's a dragon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Spyro was a dragon, and you played as Spyro, and you were this cute little purple dragon running around collecting things to build other things to get to something that I don't remember because I haven't played it in a long time.
Okay.
But it's the only dragon game I've ever played was Spyro.
I dabbled down the Warcraft rabbit hole, but never got down to the level of the dragons. Mm-hmm. They were down there. I know it.
Well, there were dragons. There's Pokemon that are dragons. Because I know I have a Charmander. My daughter and I play Pokemon Go. And there's an Ender Dragon in Minecraft that she tells me about all the time. I don't play Minecraft, but she is rabid about it.
Well, that's a big deal. Yeah.
There's an Ender Dragon, and apparently it is really awesome.
And there's something about getting its egg. I know my kids were into it, too. Mm-hmm. I used to threaten them when they were misbehaving that I would delete their progress. It worked very well. I was told was against the Geneva War Conventions. That's what they tried to tell me. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the Magic the Gathering card game type games had dragons in them, too. Mm-hmm. So did you have any favorite television or movies that had dragons that you like to watch? I mean, we talked about the Lord of the Rings stuff. And obviously, Reign of Fire. But were there others that you guys were especially felt compelled by when you watched?
I really liked the dragon from the new Dungeons and Dragons movie.
No, yeah. No,
sir. It's the best punchline ever.
There's no such thing as a fat dragon. No such thing.
It had to be done. It was perfect.
Gross. It was gross beyond talking about. Oh my god. A fat dragon. Give me a break.
Well, now we know what James doesn't like. He has clearly opinions.
Oh man.
So what about you, Katie? Was there any dragons on screen that you really liked?
Sorry, I couldn't find my unmute button. What was the dragon? I can't remember it because it's like late for me. What was the dragon where it was like real people and the dragon was CGI, something heart, what is it?
Oh, Dragonheart?
Dragonheart.
That was the Sean Connery one.
Like, yeah, it was Sean Connery. There we go. I was about to say, it's the one guy with the great voice. I did love that movie. I just couldn't remember it. I really liked that movie just because the dragon was so visual. And that was before like we had Smaug and the Hobbit in the current like Hobbit. You know, like it was so much more visual for me then. I really liked that dragon.
Okay. Did anybody get in? Go ahead.
Oh, I like the Eastern dragons in the Ten Rings. Marvel did the Ten Rings movie, which I have no idea where it fits in the continuity because they've lost me by now. But that was really fun. I like seeing the Eastern dragons as well as the Western dragons because most of our movies really play into that Western style dragon. Mm-hmm. It's going to have four legs, either four legs or two, depending. Wings, all that kind of stuff, and to have that serpentine, beautiful Eastern dragon was so much fun.
And it wasn't fat.
It's not fat. It was very svelte.
The two legs, four legs things is kind of a hot topic amongst dragons. Like a lot of people claim that two legs are wyverns, right?
Yes. And
four
yes.
legs dragons. Like this gets pretty hot.
Well,
like,
I'm sure it's hot.
On another podcast, and this got pretty intense, and I was like, didn't know there were such strong feelings on the four legged
yes.
like wyvern, mm-hmm. yeah.
And you got drakes too that come in there, which mm-hmm. is just Old English for dragon, but apparently those mm-hmm. are supposedly different. I've seen some threads.
Yeah.
I had opinions.
Well, it got really hot because of the dragons in Game of Thrones, which are only two legged, and so
they're
people
wyverns.
Calling them wyverns instead of yeah. calling them dragons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of places on the internet where this is a matter of vasty contention.
Yes.
Do not go to Reddit. You will lose hours. They will make you rip your hair out uh-huh. and you realize those people need to touch crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned the Eastern dragons. You saw that in the animated version of Mulan that the she had mm-hmm. the smaller, but it was an Eastern dragon that mm-hmm. followed her around and offered
Mushu.
Excellent advice.
Yes,
Mushu.
Mushu.
That's another guy who has a voice that's just perfect for voiceover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, I feel like Naomi Novik did Eastern Dragons really well in the
yes.
Temeraire
yeah.
series.
I what really series?
The Temeraire.
The Temeraire series.
Is that a book or a movie?
Yes, because it starts with His Majesty's Dragon.
Yeah, okay. It's like, is it 10 books? It's not 10 books.
It's 9 books.
Yeah, and it's not on screen yet, JR, but I think it's been optioned.
Cool.
I really loved her mix of dragons. So it's basically the Napoleonic Wars. If dragons were part of armies, like if dragons were in the world, we redid the Napoleonic Wars. It was super. So Napoleon has certain kinds of dragons. China has certain kinds of dragons. And you follow Temeraire. And so she has a whole bunch of different types of dragons with different responsibilities and abilities. And it's really, it's so cool. It's super fascinating.
You know, I wargamed a lot of things in the army and a lot of enemies, even zombies once for a LT that was board, but I don't think we ever talked about dragons. I'm just picturing the Napoleonic 5-pound cannon trying to angle up high enough to get the perfect arc to actually hit a moving flying thing. It would end badly for the cannoneers.
Yeah. Disappointed in you, JR. I'm really disappointed in you.
I know. I'll do better, Katie. I'll do better. So James.
You just need air defense artillery assets.
Yeah.
That's right.
So do you like when they add dragons to historical events, James?
Oh, I have no problem at all with it, but I come from a different side of it. I have to make sure that my dragons aren't like the Dungeons & Dragons dragons, because Wizards is very litigious. And I have a little bit of fame, so when I put out a dragon, if it's a red dragon and it breathes fire and it flies, I have to watch out. They might tell me that I can't do that because it's their copyright.
It's not fire, it's napalm. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. I have to make sure all my dragons are very different from, like, my red dragon breathes lava instead of fire.
There you go.
I have to change them all completely. My black dragon can't breathe acid. It's got to breathe something else if it breathes. So I come from a kind of a different sideline. So I make sure when I write stories, I do that very same thing. All my dragons are never like the D&D dragons.
Okay. So does everybody have, when you write dragons, do you prefer to write them as the protagonist or the antagonist when you write them?
Protagonist.
Yeah.
Although I think I've done dragons that were the antagonist, but protagonist interests me. So.
Okay. What about you, Chloe?
I've done both. They are consumers. They consume everything around them at will, and it makes them a really easy antagonist that's really hard to fight, and it's a great plot structure to go chase after. But they also have all of this knowledge and all of this ability that makes them a really fun protagonist to have around as well. And I don't have a unicorns being a villain would make me angry, but anything they want.
Uh-oh.
So I'm when you said consumers, I'm picturing them some dragon curled up at a bazaar, like merching shirts or something with their like prints on it.
There we go. Drawing art.
So you wouldn't have liked
pushing a shopping cart through the grocery. Yeah.
With the wings and the little baby dragons all stuffed on them, asking for extra things.
Mm-hmm. That is something I've seen when you see dragons with wings, but the wings look more vestigial than they actually look functional. Mm-hmm. But then they want me to believe these things fly. I'm like, no, if you're going to give them wings that they're useful, make it look like they're wings.
Yeah. So, look at bees, buddy. Come on. Don't tell me about short wings.
But yeah. Disproportional-ish.
Ish.
Ish does a lot of heavy lifting for me in my life.
Ah, there we go. I've noticed.
It's magic.
Yeah.
Magic.
So Nick, have you drawn any dragons? I know you mostly do capes and cowls, but have you ventured into the winged creatures?
Okay, a buddy of mine from the Army years ago, I was still living up in Northern California, commissioned me to do a dragon. And I don't know if I have the file, I'm going to have to look for it, but it was a fire-breathing medieval-type dragon with ash from the Evil Dead with his chainsaw hand and his shotgun riding him.
Oh, neat.
Nice.
That could be interesting.
It took me about a month to do it because I really wanted to put that level of detail into the dragon, and I used a lot of shading, I used a lot of stippling techniques. So, like, I had to dig back into, like, lessons in college. I'm like, okay, how do I do this? And I thought it turned out pretty good. I need to track it down. It's somewhere in my Facebook or something like that.
One of the pieces of conventional wisdom in the author community is that if you want dragons on your cover, it's going to triple the cost almost. So for the ladies that have written dragons, have you found that to be true, finding good dragon art? Do you mostly have to do, you know, independent, like, covers that were just for you? Or are you able to get stock art type stuff? How's that worked?
It's getting a lot better and a lot easier because the modeling software has dragons available in it now. It's in the last 2 or 3 years that those have shown up, and you can change out the colors and the textures. You can get feathered dragons. And it doesn't cost any more to put a dragon on the cover than any other character because of the newest modeling software. But you need to be looking for that to be what you want and what your readers are looking for to understand what the book is. Getting something hand illustrated is always going to be a lot more expensive. I did do a novella in a different pen name with a dragon on the cover where just finding it as a stock spec cover wasn't anywhere near as challenging as I expected it to be. People like dragons and they like to put dragons on covers.
That gives me ideas. I've seen dragons with feathers, I've seen them with scales, and I've seen them with leather hides. Do you guys have a preference? I kind of prefer the scales for me. I think that looks better in my head.
My dragons have scales. I think that's just a default. But I think I have readers that are like, I prefer feathered dragons. So I didn't know that was a thing until my readers started talking about it.
It came out with some of the new research on dinosaurs because everyone equates dragon to dinosaur kind of thing. And so we're learning that some of the dinosaurs that we thought maybe had scales were leather. Oh, can you magnify that for us, Nick? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a lot of the dinosaur stuff is showing. That's nice. It's showing them with feathers now in some of the newly discovered stuff.
I'm just saying, if there was a T-Rex with wings, I would never leave my house.
No, it's really funny when you look at the picture of a swan. If a swan were presented like a dinosaur, T-Rex might very well have had wings.
Mm-hmm. And swans are freaking scary. So
swans are dangerous.
They will take you out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, and again, it goes back to culture and environment. Go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, I was just going to say, I like that all of those are still recognizably dragons. That you can have feathered dragons, you can have scaly dragons, you can have the lizard hide dragons, and we still recognize them. We might have preferences. My dragons have the pebbly hide, but you're not going to say, oh, that's not a dragon because it has feathers, unless you're really, really picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we still see them as dragons.
Okay.
And environment and culture of the story again. My kid is nuts over the Wings of Fire series. She and everybody her age, that is huge in YA right now. And there are 10 different clans of dragons, and they're all suited to their environment. And so when you see the leaf wings, they have a very different form and function than the sea wings do, because the sea wings have webbing between their fingers. They swim a lot, and so they've got gills, and they've got all these adjustments to being able to swim, where they're like, well, it's flying, it's just underwater. Versus the desert ones who have scorpion tails and have things, you know, eyes that can block out the sandstorms. So it's kind of an interesting look because it's all dragon protagonists and they're all from different areas and interacting with each other, but they all have things that culturally and because of the environment that they're in, mm-hmm. that garners their powers and what they end up looking like and functioning like. So I enjoyed it for that. Some of the storytelling is a little weird, but that's okay. It works for my daughter and makes her happy. But I did love seeing how they'd come up with all these different ways that a dragon might look and the different things that they're going to have, because it's based on where, you know, and we do that, you know, when if a dragon's always up in the ice area, that's going to be very different than something that is in a desert or a marsh.
So while we keep talking, I'm going to show you some of the dragon art. So I will say that Melissa and James, your art came up when I searched dragon. When you guys look at dragons, you mentioned aquatic. I haven't actually seen aquatic dragons. Is that something you see a lot?
It's very oriental.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's more of an Eastern dragon feel, I think. I have aquatic dragons. I have forest dragons. I have mountain dragons. And they all vary. But I've never done feathered dragons. So yeah, I think it's fairly common.
Now we have aquatic
dragons. Disney did a movie.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
No, I was done. I was just saying aquatic dragons make sense, I guess, especially in Asian Eastern dragons. No wings.
Disney recently did a movie called Raya and the Last Dragon, and The dragon was voiced by Awkwafina, and it was a water dragon, and it could, once it was fully powered, it could bounce off of the clouds, like jump between clouds, because it was a water dragon. I thought
that
was
cool. Do we have a picture of Barney?
That's not a dragon, that's a dinosaur. Katie might recognize this one.
That's cute. That's my mugs.
They change colors as you put water or hot something hot in them.
Yeah, it's like a color changing mug for sure.
And this is one that Melissa sent me. I believe this is one for your dragons, correct, Melissa?
Yes, this is my main character, Lamprifier. My youngest child drew this for me.
Oh, she's good. Or I'm assuming she's
really good. She's very talented.
And then some of these, all of the dragons that we're showing either are from the authors that are on the panel today or from the Creative Commons. So don't come at us. If you don't want the Creative Commons, you can take it out.
Don't come at us.
All right. So some more Eastern dragons. And I think I've even seen some on pottery that was from the Greeks and the Romans. I've seen some dragon motifs as well. But this one's obviously Asian.
Now, that's one of the fascinating things about dragons is that if you dig into the folklore side, and you guys know that I love this particular bent on different things, is almost every major culture has dragons of some sort. And they do have these features that when you read about them, you can say, that's a dragon. There's dragon in Greek myths. There's dragons in Egyptian. There's dragons in African. You get these similarities. Almost every major culture has some kind of a myth that connects to the idea of dragons. And I think that's another reason why we're so fascinated about them is because they show up in all of our cultures. Mm-hmm. And we don't know why it's so universal. If it's just something we're teaching each other, did that happen because of trade roads and shared stories? Or is it something that really was that universal at some time, that there was always a creature that brought forth this kind of imagery? And so it's fascinating to look at that because it's one of the few things that really is that universal as far as having those kinds of background stories.
And so this is another one that Melissa sent in. I think this is from your series too, Melissa?
Yes, this is the villain of the series. And speaking of two different types of dragons, they have ancient dragons that look very different from modern dragons. Modern dragons are very sleek, and ancient dragons are all spiny and spiky, and they're really big and bulky. And so this is the villain of the series.
And cool. Scary. You forgot the scary part.
Very scary.
The Egyptians.
Yeah.
So water. I guess it's a water dragon because they're on a boat. Mm-hmm. So the what was... When you guys found dragons, were you kids or did you come to that discovery as an adult? I can't imagine you'd live to adulthood and not have heard of dragons, but I guess people are out there.
I think the fascination
was Excalibur for me.
They were a character and they were around, but I think that the fascination with them is an element of a story was an adult thing.
Same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was 8. I loved my dragons from the time that I was little.
So
it actually started with Sir George and the Dragon, because cool. I found a painting and then talked people into helping me find the story.
And then this is Melissa's series. I like your dragons on your cover.
Oh, good. Thank you. That actually represented a lot of work because the cover artist had more of a vision that matched the ancient dragons. So the original model for that was really spiky and kind of fierce and kind of like I had to say, you know, let's back off a little bit. These are more streamlined dragons. They're not spiky because he would hate it if he was riding up there on a spiky dragon. He would not be happy. So,
yeah.
But I like how they turned out. It's not the first cover set, but the final set worked out okay.
Great pictures, JR. Good job, you guys.
Yeah, I have to, when we show art, I have to only search through the Creative Commons, just you know, respect property and IP and such. I can't exactly complain if people violate mine if I'm not respecting theirs, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to search that. So obviously we've gotten some ideas for future panels, dragons in YA. I think that could be interesting. Dragons as mounts or, you know, the dragon rider of a Pern model. And Jana gave me like a dissertation almost of topics and subtopics for the various panels on dragons that we'll have to come back with. So we'll definitely be doing more of these. But we're at the hour mark, and Katie is yawning, and some of my people on this panel are early morning types. I don't know what that's like. Coffee at the midnight is my happy space. I might be part vampire. I don't know. But as we bring this close, and Melissa, we definitely have to plan around having you back. I know you're
Thank you.
Time zones are a thing, but we're going to make this happen because this was fun.
Great.
But
Thank you
as
so
we
much.
Wrap this up, I want everyone to tell me what they're working on now and where people can find them. So we're going to start with Miss Chloe Gardner, and we're going to put you on solo layout so you can be special.
Oh, hello. I am working on book 6 of my Queen's Chair series. Book 5 will be out by the time this goes live, because we are actually live tonight. And plowing through another 4-book installment to that series. It's a massive fantasy universe with 20 plus books in it. And reading guides available on my website, chloegarner.com, because the sequencing is something that everybody really wants to know about.
Okay. And do you need that reading order to make it make sense, or is that just more help in?
The individual series all stand alone very well, but if you want to get the higher plot arcs that are stretching from one series to the next, I recommend a reading order. I don't think it's mandatory. You're just going to spoil yourself.
Okay. James, what are you working on right now that has dragons in it?
That's an excellent question, JR. I'm working on 2 different novel series that have dragons in it. And you'll be able to buy them on Amazon and Bookapee, of course. And then there's that short story you're making me do against my will that has a dragon in it. And you can pretty much see a lot of my stuff on Amazon these days, but it's really high priced. All that TSR role-playing stuff is like tripled or quadrupled in price. So it's hard to pick up something that was sold for 10, and now it's selling for 150.
Makes you wish you'd kept a few more copies for yourself to sell now.
Yes, I suppose, JR, you are correct.
All right, Jana, what are you working on that's got dragons in it? And what personality is writing it?
Jenna Ray is writing right now because I have a trilogy that I must get finished. My husband really, really wants it for his birthday, so we'll see if that's going to happen or not. But that does have a dragon in it, and it is the last book in The War of the Lich.
Lich. I love those, too. That's another panel. I'm getting
That would be a fun panel. I would totally talk about liches.
Whenever I have Jana on the show, I keep my document that's called Panel Topics up, and I just start adding things as she's talking, because we get lots of ideas from her. She's a good
That's my job. Idea Fairy. I'm going to get wings, and I can, you know, little book wings, and I can
Idea Fairy doesn't sound as cool as Muse, though.
Not Muse. I'll think about it. I need a new title.
We'll get back to you. We'll get the panel to vote. Like, maybe that'll...
Yeah.
All right, Katie,
what
are you working on? It's got dragons right now.
I'm actually doing a special series that takes place out of my usual fantasy world. It's called Smoke and Sea, and it's about these tiny butterfly-sized dragons that are dependent on their relationship with a bonded human to survive, and they're going extinct. And so this woman named Alyssa is on the bend to save the baby dragons, basically. a hot minute before this book hits shelves. I have some other plans with it, but that's what I'm going to go do after this is finish up a scene and do some first drafting on it, because I'm really excited about it. So.
Is this going to be YA or is it standard adult fiction?
It'll be YA. Yeah. It's YA.
Okay. You've been branching out. So
you just, yeah, no, I'll probably always be YA fantasy for sure. It's within my usual feel and theme, but it's not within the same fantasy world. So.
Okay, and last but certainly not least, Miss Melissa, what are you working on that's got dragons in it?
Well, I'm currently working on a lit RPG series called Warmaster. And in this world, there are places that are too dangerous for people to go because they can't reach a high enough level. And the places that are too dangerous to go are where the dragons live. So eventually, the series will be them figuring out what to do about the dragons, and I don't know yet if the dragons are going to be friendly or not. I kind of think not, but we'll have to see.
You just sold me on it. Where can I give you my money?
Just pass it on over.
I'm even going to buy the butterfly dragons because why not? And I agree with Madam Stabby Stab's comment in the side chat that she definitely needs to get something like that 3D printed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's tax deductible for Katie at least.
Mm-hmm. I would buy a 3D printed butterfly dragon totally. I really would.
Now I'm wishing I had a 3D printer. I'm going to have to find a friend that's got one, I guess.
Yeah. My kid would want like 6 of them in different colors. Mm-hmm. Actually 7, because she'd have to have one for every color of the rainbow. And then she would put them up on her shelf in appropriate order and give them all names. So if you ever do this, let us know, because I will buy all of the butterfly dragon merch. All of it.
Are we going full Roy G. Biv? I mean, like all the colors? Well, I remember that for some reason.
I have a 3D printer. I have a 3D printer right there.
There you go.
All right, right there. So just finish unpacking
in that box.
All right, Nick, have you been drawing anything more recently with dragons? Because, you know, we gave everyone else a chance to speak.
No, it's actually been a few years. I think 2015 was the last time I drew a dragon, but I really want to get my my comic book, The Last Pendragon, going again, where I would love to throw in those mystical creatures like dragons. So it'll be fun. I'll probably start practicing here pretty soon. I have friends that are so near and dear to my heart that love to challenge me. And they're like, hey, man, I haven't seen any artwork from you. And then crack the whip on me. And then they're giving me challenges. And I'm like, well, it beats sitting on my butt watching TV, you know, trying to heal. So I might as well.
So I just want you to know,
fired up again.
When you said no, James was giving you the disappointed dad face. So clearly, you need to be better. All right. And as we bring this home, I want everyone to tell the listeners and viewers at home, and it will be in the show notes, where they can find you. And I think just because there's so many of us, it might be easiest to put where you're most active so they can go there. And then I will link to all the things in the show notes. So first we have Miss Chloe. Where can listeners find you at home?
The best place to look for me is on my Facebook group. We are active and talking most days, and it's a very fun group of people to hang out with.
Sounds like fun. I joined that group, and nobody has stalked me yet, so I think it's safe. I tested the waters for you people.
Hello.
And I have all of your links already because you guys have all returning guests, which made it really, really easy. And Jana stalked Melissa very well, so I have her links even. But James, where can they find you on the wild, wild interwebs?
I'm kind of hard to get a hold of, but I do Facebook every day.
Okay, Facebook it is, and I will link to all the things. Jana, your many personalities can be found where? And I know the right answer.
It's at opalkingdompress.com, or you can find me over on Facebook. That's where I'm most active.
Freaking stand. And she's on Discord sometimes.
I am in Discord. I'm often on Discord. Come over to the Three Ravens server, and we will wax philosophical.
And if you're listening at home and you're not a writer or a creator of any kind, but you want to come on and get nerdy with us, we do have a sub-channel in the Three Ravens since we affiliate with them. And if you want to be a guest, when I post open calls, there's no requirement that you be a creator to come on the show and get nerdy. So you know, join the Three Ravens Discord and join the shenanigans. All right, Katie, where can they find you on the wild, wild interwebs?
The best place is katiecrossbooks.com. They can subscribe right at the top of my website to get my first dragon book, Flame, for free. And you'll get an email with the ebook or the audiobook. So you could have either or both.
If you join her newsletter, I will tell you she will make you feel inadequate because she like works 50 hours a day. She doesn't sleep. She writes all the things, narrates her own books.
He's a liar.
It's shameful.
All the time.
It's shameful. She just makes the rest of us look human. If you join the newsletter, she does have free short content too that she gives out periodically because I am on that newsletter. And do you still do your book reviews and your chats with some of your subscribers?
Yeah, so the first and third Friday of every month, I go on Zoom, and the third Friday is book club, and the fourth Monday is book club, because I launch a new book the first Friday of every month, and so we do the book club the 2 weeks later, so you get 2 weeks to read it, and then the first Friday and second Monday are just, we call it Coffee with Katie. We just get together, and we just kind of shoot the breeze and meet people, and readers can ask questions, so if you join my newsletter, you'll get all of those links.
And there's no pressure, but clearly there's homework. You have 2 weeks, people. Tick, tick. All right. Melissa, how can they find you online?
My website is melissamcshanewrites.com. You can find a link to join my newsletter list. I send a newsletter once a month with information and freebies and stuff like that. And I'm also on Facebook as Melissa McShane, and I have a readers group as well, so on Facebook.
Outstanding. I'll have to get your readers group. That is the one I don't have. And we'll put all of that in the show notes, and you can find us on our Linktree, linktr.ee, Linktree/Blasters and Blades Podcast. Again, Linktree/Blasters and Blades Podcast, where we link to all the things, the BitChutes, the Rumbles, the YouTubes, the Twitter, our email for professional purposes only at blastersandbladespodcast@gmail.com. We have a Facebook group and Facebook page where all the shenanigans happen. And if you want to join the discussions about with us about the various things, that's a place to go. I am still working on finding someone who knows how to make the Discords like pop and do all the things with it. And soon that will be available for the public as well. And then if you want to get a little snarky, Miss Stabby Stab has her own Instagram, Twitter, and email where you can snark away, but she will make you cry in reply. So I'm just, you've been warned. You could join us on our website at anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades. Again, anchor.fm/blasters-and-blades, where for as little as 99 cents a month, you can also help keep the lights on, or you can support the show more directly at buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Hanley. Again, buymeacoffee.com/author J.R. Hanley. Be sure to put in the comment section this for the podcast, and we will promise to make my crazy co-host over caffeinated. They will pep up like nothing else. Just let me drink some of that coffee brand coffee. And if you click the link below, there's also a 10% discount code podcast grunts for that as well. And with that being said, thank you for spending some of your precious time with us. For my crazy co-host, I am J.R. Hanley, and this was the Blasters and Blades Podcast. We'll be back next week at the same time, where we'll indulge our love of nerd culture, cheesy jokes, and all things that go boom. And I see a puppy. Can I have him?
This is Jaeger. You can have him.
I'm going to fly him right out. So thank you guys all for coming. This was a lot of fun. I'm going to be doing more dragon panels based on Jana's copious notes in this this chat as well. I think there's definitely room to come back. So we will do this again, and all of you will be invited. Obviously, scheduling's a thing, but we appreciate you all coming out. Thank you. All right, and with that, yeah. Wait for it.